From Washington, this is VOA News. I'm Steve Norman reporting. President Obama stepping up pressure on the U.S. Senate, which appears set for a political showdown on Sunday when it meets only hours before some key surveillance powers of the National Security Agency are set to expire.
I don't want us to be in a situation in which, for a certain period of time, those authorities go away and suddenly we're dark, and heaven forbid, we've got a problem where we could have prevented a terrorist attack or apprehended someone who was engaged in dangerous activity, but we didn't do so simply because of inaction in the Senate.
Both House members left for one-week access, a recess that is, the House of Representatives overwhelmingly passing the USA Freedom Act. That compromise legislation would end bulk collection of Americans' phone records, but let the NSA search the records held by phone companies on a case-by-case basis. Spanish government has approved an accord to permanently hold a U.S. military base, a force there that would mainly deal with the crises in Africa. Agreement will allow the U.S. to station up to 3,000 military personnel and 40 aircraft at the Morón Air Base that's located near the city of Seville in southern Spain. United States on Friday dropped Cuba from a list designating the country as a state sponsor of terrorism. It was another step toward the resumption of diplomatic links between Havana and Washington after a five-decade standoff. Cuba's removal from the list could give it more access to global financial markets and loans from organizations such as the World Bank. U.S. and Cuban diplomats have been holding discussions about improving ties. This is VOA News. A suicide bomber reportedly disguised as a woman blew himself up outside a Shiite mosque in Saudi Arabia's predominantly Shiite eastern province on Friday, leaving several dead. Edward Uranian is following the story.
Amateur video showed worshippers shouting and screaming after the sound of the blast outside the Anoud Mosque in the eastern province city of Damam. Other video showed fire engulfing at least half a dozen vehicles in a car park outside the building as a thick cloud of black smoke filled the air. Arab media reported that the suicide bomber was disguised as a woman dressed in a black abaya and face veil. It was not immediately clear if the bomber was wearing a belt packed with explosives or if his vehicle was booby-trapped. Saudi Arabia's top religious official, Grand Mufti Sheikh Abdulaziz Al-Sheikh, insisted that the blast was a crime and that those who were behind it would be punished. Edward Uranian for VOA News, Cairo.
Iraqi security officials say two car bombs exploded at two heavily fortified five-star hotels in Baghdad, killing at least 15, wounding 42 more. Nobody claimed responsibility for the blast, but Iraq is seeing almost daily attacks that have been frequently claimed by the Islamic State militants. A Prophet Muhammad cartoon drawing contest sponsored by a group of potentially armed bikers got underway Friday outside the Islamic Community Center in the U.S. state of Arizona. Organizers say the rally is in response to an incident earlier this month in which two gunmen opened fire on a similar contest in Texas. The gunmen were killed. Amid tough times and high hopes for change in Nigeria, the country's new president, Muhammadu Buhari, took office on Friday. Chris Stein reports.
Amid celebrations in the northern city of Kaduna, many voters say they have no regrets about voting for Mr. Buhari, a former military ruler turned Democrat who defeated former President Goodluck Jonathan in presidential polls in March. Mr. Jonathan was the first incumbent president to fail to win re-election since Nigeria returned to democracy in 1999. The leader of the local Igbo ethnic group, Chief Dominic Uzo, says he's keeping an open mind about the new leader.
Let us see whether our story will be different from what we have been having for the past 16 years. It is not out of place in a country to have a change.
Chris Stein for VOA News, Dakar.
FIFA President Sepp Blatter was re-elected to another four-year term on Friday, came days after football's governing body was shaken by widespread corruption allegations. This week, U.S. authorities arrested seven top football officials in Zurich.
That's the latest world news from VOA.
From Washington, VOA presents Issues in the News.
Welcome to Issues in the News. I'm Fred Barnes of the Weekly Standard, and joining me on the show this week are Tom DeFrank, contributing editor to National Journal, and Tim Mack, senior congressional correspondent for the Daily Beast. And here are the issues. World soccer, or football as it's known outside the United States, has been struck by a $150 million corruption scandal. 13 current and former officials of the International Soccer Organization, known by the acronym FIFA, F-I-F-A, have been indicted as investigations continue in the United States, Brazil, Switzerland, and other countries. In Washington, the Obama administration has reexamined its strategy against Islamic State, or ISIS, in Iraq, but has done little to actually change that strategy. And in Hawaii, American Defense Secretary Ashton Carter demanded that China halt its land reclamation and what he called, quote, militarization of disputed features in the South China Sea. Well, who thought we'd be starting out with soccer, and that would be probably the biggest story in the world at the moment, what's happened with these indictments, with the whole story of corruption in international soccer, at least in the private organization, FIFA, that actually runs international soccer and the World Cup and so on. Tom, there have been rumors and stories and vague stories anyway about corruption in international soccer for decades. And why now? What has prompted this?
Well, it's hard to know exactly, Fred, except I know the United States started, the U.S. government started an investigation into this alleged corruption after the U.S. Lost a bid to get the World Cup in
2018.
It's going to be in Russia in 2018 and Qatar in 2022. And there was a widespread feeling within the U.S. government legal community that there was widespread corruption, payoffs. I mean, you have to ask yourself, in the case of Qatar, what sense does it make to give the World Cup to a country where the summer temperatures are well over 120 degrees Fahrenheit, not the most conducive climate. But that's when I think it started. I mean, the notion of soccer corruption at the international level is redundant, to put it mildly. Mm-hmm. But what's different is that somebody, in this case the U.S. government, has decided to go after the alleged perpetrators. And it's quite interesting that several of the senior officials of FIFA were arrested at a hotel in Zurich in Switzerland as they were going to a meeting. And I think other shoes are going to drop, for sure. Mm-hmm. It is quite a story, and mm-hmm. you can be sure it's mm-hmm. probably the most read and listened to story around the world right now.
You know, one of the heroes in this, and I would call her that, is actually Loretta Lynch, who is now the Attorney General of the United States, who, as the chief federal prosecutors in New York, actually began an investigation 4 years ago. And there's, of course, claims that the U.S. shouldn't be involved here, but with the money laundering through U.S. banks and all this stuff, certainly there is jurisdiction.
Well, there's no question that there is jurisdiction, because everything between wire transfers and using the mails for allegedly corrupt transactions, there's no question the U.S. can do this. I think the most interesting thing about it to me is what about sponsors? Mm-hmm. There are a lot of sponsors, including worldwide conglomerates, including people like Visa, and there's even some speculation that Nike mm-hmm. may have been involved mm-hmm. In kickbacks mm. to FIFA to get their brand maximized mm-hmm. around the world in soccer events. So there's all sort of other shoes to drop coming.
Mm. Well, Tim, FIFA has a lot to sell. The television rights, the location mm-hmm. of the World Cup, which comes every 4 years, the international soccer tournament, and other things. And here we are with this, where at stake now, because they're, I know in Switzerland, they're looking again at whether the World Cup should be held in Russia in 2018 and in Qatar in 2022. And those countries have already been granted the right to be hosts. But now there are questions about whether that was done fairly.
Right. And this is the most heavily watched sports event in the world.
Indeed.
And so this is enormously controversial, and it has worldwide effects. You know, you even see Vladimir Putin wading into this and accusing the United States of meddling and overreach. You kind of see, you know, that old Cold War dynamic asserting itself through soccer, which I think is fascinating. And there are other elements, too. I mean, this is kind of let the public consciousness revert back to a look at how many people are dying during the construction of World Cup venues in Qatar, for example. There's an enormous death toll of indentured servants and foreigners who are being sent into Qatar to build stadiums and facilities. That's one element to the story that people are starting to pay attention to again and otherwise wouldn't have if this issue of corruption hadn't arisen. And there's also American ties to this in the sense that Qatar has given money to the Clinton Foundation.
Yeah.
And that brings up red flags about the extent to which the Clinton Foundation and the Clinton family might be tied to some of these very controversial issues.
You know, there's been the Putin angle is certainly one of the big angles, and that someone I know, Tunku Varadarajan, who's writing in Politico, used to be with the Wall Street Journal, says this. He says, the award of the World Cup hosting rights to Russia and Qatar will before long be nullified. No other outcome is possible, given that Switzerland's attorney general has also announced an investigation into, quote, suspicion of criminal mismanagement and of money laundering in connection with the allocation of the 2018 and 2020 new football World Cups. You know, I think we've heard, you mentioned, we've heard from Putin a little bit, but you can imagine if Russia is denied the World Cup in 2018, which they have been awarded, if he's now denied it, you just can imagine the eruption.
Absolutely.
You know, Tom? Especially since this if it happens, would go right to the heart of the Russian culture, especially Putin. He demands respect. He believes that after the fall of the Berlin Wall and after the collapse of the Soviet Empire, the West has treated Russia shabbily, and he has been disrespected. I believe, from a psychological standpoint, one of the reasons why Putin annexed Crimea and has been misbehaving in Ukraine is to, in effect, thump his chest and say, we demand respect, we will be taken seriously, and so forth. If this were to happen, he would just, his head would explode, there's no doubt about it.
And no telling what he would do. The but it won't be good. He's certainly not going to accept this sitting down. Well, let's take time out for a short break. We'll be right back with more issues in the news and actually more on World Cup soccer.
News is mobile, and so are you. Get VOA on the go. Get VOA on Google Currents. Get VOA News specifically made for your tablet and smartphone. Clean, simple, fast. Now available for Android or Apple phones or tablets. Download the Google Currents app for free today. Get VOA on Google Currents at voanews.com/currents.
Welcome back to Issues in the News on VOA. I'm Fred Barnes with Tim Mack and Tom DeFrank. And let's go back to South Africa being awarded the World Cup in 2010. And South Africa wound up doing a fine job of actually hosting the event. The question is, Tom, how they got it. And I think we know, I'm not sure whether it was in the indictment of 13 former and current officials, but the question is, they provided $10 million to one official and actually narrowly won the right to have the World Cup in 2010. That's sort of a precedent that should be worrisome to Russia and Qatar.
Well, I mean, it's interesting that a lot of smaller countries have seen the World Cup as a way to get onto the world stage and to get, as in the Putin context I mentioned earlier, to get more global respect. And I think a lot of these countries are very susceptible to bribes and kickbacks to raise their profile. And it'll be interesting to see whether some of these smaller countries like Paraguay and others, where some of their officials have been indicted, we'll have to see where this goes. I mean, the one thing that I know about Loretta Lynch is that she has not shown her entire hand here. This is this is the proverbial tip of the iceberg. I believe there will be more indictments. Mm-hmm. And so this is a story that I think will seize global consciousness for weeks and months to come. It's just beginning.
Yeah, I think, well, that's what she said. This is just the beginning. But I think you're suggesting that once somebody is indicted, they know you're serious, and then you might want to make a deal with the prosecutors.
Well, and in fact, one FIFA official was in that situation and has already made a deal and had agreed to carry a wire to record conversations with some of the individuals he was dealing with from some countries and other FIFA members. So I think once that is well known and is becoming more well known, I think that is going to strike fear into a lot of individuals who will not want to face the prospect of serious jail time.
All right, one more issue, Tim, and that is what now with FIFA? And here's what, again, I refer to Tunku Varadarajan, who's very good on this issue. That's why I'm quoting from him. And he says FIFA will have to be rebuilt from scratch. An opaque boys club that was founded in an era when the game was less global and the money negligible is unsuited for the management of a sport whose income makes the eyes water. A small committee of respected figures, British judges, Swedish prime ministers, and the like, should be convened to come up with a new blueprint for FIFA. The organization needs to be thoroughly and mercilessly taken away from the Sepp Blatter, who's been the head of FIFA now for years.
Right, I mean, and this is trying to disengage this sport, which is the most popular sport in the world, and the enjoyment that a lot of people get from this sport, from the bureaucratic corruption and the problems behind the scenes and the unfairness when it comes to whether it's the judgment of where the World Cup should be held to games and so on. A thorough cleaning seems pretty necessary at this point.
Yeah. Well, I hope they get to that. And, you know, I have a feeling we're going to be talking about soccer in subsequent weeks here. Tom, you said this thing will go on for weeks. I think it goes on for months.
Yeah,
maybe years.
I do. I do, too. And let me just pass along a little something. You have to wonder what they're thinking at the headquarters of the International Olympic Committee, which has been dogged for years by similar accusations of scandal. And
sure, we remember
kickbacks.
When Mitt Romney intervened in the Winter Olympics because it had been
to clean it up, and he did a fine job. And so that has little to do with this, but I suspect somebody's going to want to take a closer look at the IOC's financing. But,
okay, let's turn to ISIS, Islamic State. We know they took Mosul some months ago. Now they've taken Ramadi, which has prompted the Obama administration to review its strategy there, which doesn't seem to be working, at least effectively. And yet they are defending the strategy and saying that the problem is really, it's not what the U.S. is doing, which is mainly bombing and 3,000 troops helping, but not joining the fighting with the Iraqi army, but that there's not much more they can do, and they don't want to change the strategy. The Washington Post had a pretty harsh editorial a few days ago that said that's not sufficient. Tim?
Right. Well, you know, we've got a great story on the Daily Beast on Friday by Nancy Youssef about how the Obama administration seems ready to just muddle through to the end of the president's term, that they're not going to be seriously changing their strategy towards ISIS in their campaign. They're not going to be making any major course corrections. That the fall of Ramadi does not seem to have awoken any sort of desire to make any change to the direction of this campaign, which is clearly not going in the right direction. Mm-hmm. But the Pentagon seems to insist, and the administration seems to insist, that everything is going fine, that ISIS is still strategically losing. But it's hard to see that when you look at the facts on the ground, that ISIS is substantially losing in any way. There's a real disconnect between the way that the government is speaking and the way that anyone with two eyes or a subscription to a newspaper could tell.
Mm-hmm. Tom, I don't know whether the administration is willing to accept a defeat or even what a defeat would be. I mean, clearly, the Iraqi government's army has been defeated. They fled Ramadi, and now the Iranians are building up the Iraqi militia, which we don't know how well they'll fight. But there may just be some sort of a stalemate or a muddle, the way Tim suggested. But I just wonder whether the Obama administration is willing to accept what most people would think is a defeat in Iraq.
Well, of course, the Obama administration cannot ever utter that word. But I think reasonable people would say we're losing right now. I mean, the White House is falling back on the old bromide that we heard from Korea to Vietnam, which is air power can carry the day. Well, we're bombing Iraq and Syria back to the Stone Age, in the famous quote of a former Air Force general, very famous Curtis LeMay. But it's not rolling back ISIS gains. And now, of course, they've taken over the Syrian city of Palmyra. And you just get a feeling that Tim is right, that the administration wants to be able to muddle through and hope they can do something which keeps ISIS out of Baghdad, which would be a catastrophe if they were to take Baghdad. Nobody would believe that this is not a loss, and you just have to wonder. Time and time and time again, you now hear senior administration officials anonymously say, "Well, this is going to have to be addressed by the next president," which seems to me to be a bit of a capitulation of leadership here.
Well, you know, that would suggest that the administration doesn't expect to have achieved victory or dominance or success over the next 18 months.
It'll be interesting to see what General Martin Dempsey has to say after he retires in October as chairman of the Joint Chiefs of Staff. He's a former Army general, and we'll come back to that, I suppose, in a second.
Yeah, we will. But now it's time for another break. We'll be right back with Issues in the News.
Here's a quick quiz. What do the letters LTATOMLAW stand for? We know the answer, right? Listen to Akwe Thompson on Nightline Africa weekends. Add to that 16 and 18 UTC on VOA, and we have a perfect score. That was easy.
Welcome back. I'm Fred Barnes with Tom DeFrank and Tim Mack and Martin Dempsey, the chairman of the Joint Chiefs of Staff. Tom,
a favorite of President Obama, but he'll be retiring on October 1st after 4 years in the job. Obama really likes him, really respects him. But I think Dempsey is known privately to believe that you're not going to be able to fix this without 10,000 to 20,000 American combat troops directly involved in combat operations. It'll be interesting to see whether Dempsey says that publicly after he retires, but there's no indication that President Obama is interested in that kind of a solution, despite military people believing that that's the only thing that can fix this.
Okay, let's turn to the South China Sea, where China is doing some land reclamation, and and Ashton Carter, the new Secretary of Defense, is talking tough about their militarization of disputed features. Tom, what are the features? And I'll have to say, Ashton Carter didn't say anything new, but he did use some tough language that China's got to stop this claim.
Well, these are small disputed islands in the middle of the South China Sea, and there's been surveillance photographs for months showing a buildup. The Chinese, these are known as, most people refer to these as the Spratly Islands. The Chinese have another name for them, but they have been reclaiming land. They've been building up small islands and atolls. And in recent days, the Wall Street Journal has quoted U.S. intelligence officials as saying there is some militarization underway. There was, in fact, a couple of motorized artillery units on one of these islands, and it's the Pentagon believes that at the very least the Chinese are going to build some airstrips which would allow them to forward base fighter and fighter bombers in an area that is highly contested. And I think the U.S. and the People's Republic of China are headed on a real collision course over this one. The Chinese are determined to assert their sovereignty over this this part of the world. The Japanese are very concerned about it, and this is not heading in a good direction. And because I don't think the Chinese are going to back down, I don't think they care what Secretary Carter has to say. But he, you know, it's not often that you talk about a militarization like that, as Carter did, very 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 directly.
Mm-hmm. He also said, Tim, that China, this isn't his strongest language, though, that China is, quote, out of step, unquote, with international norms. What should we expect to happen here? I tend to agree with Tom. The Chinese aren't going to back down just on the basis of strong words from the Obama administration.
Well, the United States has indicated that it's going to be willing to do to do transit over over water, over seas, over air, as long as international law allows them to. Mm-hmm. And so what they've done is, in recent weeks, they've flown missions over these islands in order to conduct surveillance and kind of send a message, we can still go here. Mm-hmm. And there are considerations that they might send naval power, naval assets into the region as well to assert American presence there. Mm-hmm. But, you know, when you look at this whole situation, it's kind of almost like the Chinese are becoming James Bond villains, right? They're creating islands out of thin air. They're taking reefs and filling it with sand and creating airstrips and surveillance outposts and things like that. And this is just totally unprecedented. And mm-hmm. what they're trying to do is assert that these areas and the surrounding areas, the resources in those areas, are Chinese resources and Chinese assets. Mm-hmm. That's not going to sit well with the world's predominant mm-hmm. naval power.
Well, and the since World War II, and the world order sort of created and at least defended by the United States, one of the keys to it is freedom of the seas everywhere, Tom.
Right, and the Secretary of Defense made it very clear that the U.S. intends to operate in international waters and in international airspace as they've done for 200 years. And the danger of things like this, Fred, is you never can be certain that it raises the stakes for some kind of an unfortunate accident. I can remember as a young lieutenant at the Pentagon 40 years ago, where I believe it was the Chinese, shot down an American EC-121 electronic surveillance mm-hmm. airplane over international airspace. And these things happen. So when you have a situation where one side said, no, this is our airspace, this is our waters, and the rest of the world says, no, this is international air and international sea lanes, the danger of an accident that mm-hmm. would really escalate it is very sobering.
Okay, we have about a minute to go. I want to touch on one issue very quickly, and that is the Obama executive order that allows of something like 5 million illegal immigrants in the United States to stay, at least temporarily, has been blocked in two courts, and will probably mean that this order that the president gave will never be actually fully implemented. It'll be up to the next president. What do you think, Tim?
Well, it's just another issue that the next president will have to kind of deal with that's left over from the Obama administration. Mm-hmm. I mean, we still have 18 months of President Obama, mm-hmm. Already a lot of people are looking to who the next president is going to be and how mm-hmm. they're going to fix up some of these problems that will persist probably for years. Mm-hmm. The issue of immigration reform, trying to get it through Congress, trying to pass some law in order to resolve mm-hmm. the existing situation has persisted from the beginning of this administration, previous to this administration, and will persist through to the next one just because there hasn't been a solution. Mm-hmm. The president basically responds to these court actions, these legal actions, by saying, look, this is why we need to have congressional action to pass some sort of law to resolve the situation.
Well, he wants his law.
Of course he wants his law.
That's what presidents do. Tom, very quickly, Hillary Clinton, running for president for the Democratic nomination, said she would go beyond President Obama's executive order. If it's a Republican president, they would certainly do a lot less.
Right, exactly right. Hillary is obviously wants to nail down the Hispanic vote for 2016. This is another example of how executive action is not a good substitute for legislation. Yeah. And here he's trying to do something by executive authority, and he's been struck down, mm-hmm. and it probably is the death knell for what he wants to do on his watch.
Okay, that's all the time we have. Joining us today were Tom DeFrank, contributing editor to National Journal, and Tim Mack, senior congressional correspondent for The Daily Beast. This program was produced by Anya Zalewski. Our engineer was Justin Thwaites. I'm Fred Barnes of The Weekly Standard, and thank you for listening.